Okay, so thank you all for joining us today, and I want to give a big thank you to Rod Masney, who will be speaking us with this hour. So Rod is Chief Information Officer at OI. So this interview is an element of IRI's digitalization community, and through the DXC, you can access case studies and white papers with fresh, relevant content, facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. We'll have one tomorrow at 11 a.m. If you want the invitation, just let me know. We do updates with insights and additional resources, and we do webinar interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. And these always take place on the third Thursday of the month at noon. And I actually don't have anyone lined up for March. So if anyone has something exciting they want to share, please let me know. We'll be talking to USG in April. So they'll be giving us an update on their digitalization efforts. So just a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Rod. So first, the session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. And we will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there will not be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all your questions until the end. And once we open the floor to questions, you can type them in and I will read them out for you. Sometimes we're able to do it where you can turn your camera on and ask questions. I think we have too many people here today for that. So let's just do questions in the chat. All right, all that boring stuff is out of the way, so let's go ahead and get started. All right, Rod, thanks so much for joining us from lovely Toledo, Ohio. Go Rockets, I'm an alum. So tell us about your background.
Yeah, so hello everyone, Rod Masney. I am CIO for OI Glass, as Lee mentioned. OI Glass is the world's largest glass container manufacturer. So we make beer bottles, wine bottles, spirits bottles, food, and non-alcoholic beverages, containers for some of the world's biggest brands. And just to give a plug, glass is the most sustainable packaging solution that you can find. So please, as you're enjoying adult beverage safely, think of OI Glass. I've been with OI for 17 and a half years and all my career, chief IT, dating back to the mid 80s. So that's code for I'm old or experienced, as some might say. So, you know, all my time IT, looking for ways to improve the business, look for ways to enable the use of technology to deliver business value. And as a leader, we also have to provide services that aren't necessarily in today's world as transformative as they were 20 or 30 years ago, but it's part of ensuring that we're providing the services our organization needs.
So. All right. Awesome. And I will think of you the next time I'm enjoying an adult beverage very safely.
There's also a way to tell if it's an OI bottle. If you look at the heel of the bottle, there's an O-I stamp there. So if you're in Toledo, Ohio, and you see a bunch of characters in a restaurant spinning a bottle around looking at the bottom, they're trying to decide whether it's an OI one or not. So.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'll check that out the next time I'm safely enjoying an adult beverage. So can you give us a feel for where IT sits in the organization and what that encompasses there?
I sit within the finance function. So I'm part of the finance and business services organization, one step away from the CEO. And I have global responsibility for IT throughout the enterprise, and we're located throughout the world. So I have team members that report to me. And, you know, in many IT shops, the IT leader doesn't necessarily have responsibility for OT or manufacturing systems. I also have responsibility for those throughout the 70 plants that we run. So I have it IT left to right, top to bottom, and responsible for all everything related to IT.
Okay. Can we drill down a bit more on that and talk about your role as the CIO and what all falls under that?
Sure. What all falls under that is everything from service desk to desktop support. We run SAP as our enterprise resource planning system for the whole of the world. Manufacturing systems, engineering systems, digital enablement. Digital transformation really isn't a part of what we do as a are doing as a company, but we are seeking ways to digitize in every area throughout the company. I have hardcore developments of people writing code in addition to the package solutions we have, and also anything cloud related, whether it's cloud infrastructure, cloud platforms, or software as a service. So quite broad. Reporting and analytics actually rolls up to me as well, and that is an area that's very, very challenging for companies, especially as they're thinking about their digital journey, because there's a lot of analytics that's done throughout the organization using spreadsheets, small databases, Access, et cetera, et cetera. So there are things that are outside my purview that are being driven by functions, but certainly we're trying to provide guide rails, guardrails, and governance around those things. The dreaded G word people don't like to hear, governance is important. So, you know, if you think about any of the services an IT function can provide, my team is providing.
Okay, so let's shift gears, and you already kind of teed me up here. So can you talk a bit about the digitalization journey that OI has had and what the path has been?
Yeah, it's interesting. Everyone's digitization journey or digital transformation journey or every company's will be different. Even within OI, we're starting from different points throughout the organization. So manufacturing is much more digitally enabled in our company. To the other extreme, places, functions like HR, functions like legal, where digital enablement is not as mature. So, you know, I think some companies, some CIOs get a little bit out of shape in terms of where they're at on their digital journey. But as we look, we're looking across the different functions and how we can help digitally enable them to drive efficiencies and effectiveness throughout the organization. We do rely on third parties like Accenture is our back office outsourcing function, providing things like accounts receivable, accounting, accounts payable. You know, we're looking at ways to streamline their process for cost purposes. You know, we rely on other companies to help us with our journey. Companies like DXC, who is a important partner of ours, and we have done things throughout the organization to try to drive more digitization, robotics process automation. We have well over 200 robots working for us. Nice thing about RPA is robots don't get tired. They work 7 days a week and 24 hours a day and don't complain. We're doing a lot with digital enablement facing our customers with setting up enterprise portal to help them self-serve. Even my own team, we're providing some of our services with things like chatbots, AI-enabled solutions. One in particular is called Barista, where an employee in the company can ask a question of the service desk, if you will, and get an answer or get a direction. So reporting and analytics, another area where we're trying to accelerate our digitization effort. We would like to move further and faster with things with a enhanced data foundation that we can really apply effectively machine learning and artificial intelligence technologies too. So we're trying to identify ways and places that we can enable digitization, not to be digital, but to drive more business value in the company. It's really about driving business value through better efficiency, streamlining processes, and ultimately delivering value to our customers, our suppliers, and most importantly, our shareholders at the end of the day.
Mm. So how about R&D? What is your relationship with them in the organization?
R&D, it's interesting. The company is on an innovation. We've had a revitalization in innovation, and we're innovating our manufacturing technology platforms and publicly announced as a platform called Magma, which is a reimagination of how we melt, form, and inspect glass in our facilities. And truly, the goal is to be digital by design and secure by design. Cybersecurity is an incredibly important part of what we're doing there. And it's truly, my team is highly engaged in that process, working with R&D and engineering. I have a team that's deeply plugged in, and we're helping them with tools and technologies to help further digitize manufacturing. The ultimate goal is there's still a lot of art in glass making. We want to turn art into science, and the only way we're going to do that is through the use of information technology, big data analytics, to ultimately to help facilitate the traditional tribal knowledge that's run manufacturing, our manufacturing plants, to more science-based and automated process control at the end of the day. And the only way we can do that is by digitizing. And, you know, and engineering can't do it alone. IT can't do it alone. We have to do it together. So we've been working very closely with engineering and R&D to help accelerate that type of work. And we're actually in the process of building our first greenfield that I can remember since the mid-2000s, which will be our shining star plant for this new manufacturing technology that's digitally enabled. And again, it has to be digital by design, and we have to put in all the cybersecurity protections to go along with running the plant safely.
Mm. So organization-wide right now, what are you working on with regard to digitization? So, you know, working on some of those small spreadsheets, trying to turn them into things other people can use?
Yeah, absolutely. And I failed to mention one. You know, most companies have a short memory, right? If it wouldn't have been the investment we made in collaboration, which I also consider a part of our digital journey, with COVID, we would have been dead. We wouldn't have been able to operate with the investment we made in collaboration capabilities that allowed our people to connect. We are looking at next generation collaboration capabilities. So you can think about next generation of Teams or Office 365. You can think about metaverse kinds of technologies to help better connect people. So there are a lot of technologies out there today to, you know, avatars and campuses, metaverse campuses to collaborate together. We're certainly automation. So RPA, we look for every scenario we can find where we can drive automation and ultimately the efficiencies, and that has a knock-on effect of potentially reduced headcount that comes along with doing those things. Analytics, we actually, so many analytics are in the rearview mirror. We're working on a project with our commercial organization, marketing organization, to take less of a rearview mirror view of the company and how can we think about the company in the future using analytics as a tool to do that. I mentioned the digitization work that we're doing in manufacturing. People and culture, I joke, we call our HR group people and culture. We've been doing a lot of work with them over the last year to digitize their processes from the moment an employee, a prospective employee, wants to work with us until the day they retire. And that is a very, very long journey. We went through a period of time in the company if we thought, you know, well, we can hire people, we can pay people, you know, we can give them raises if they need to. But really, it's about enabling the employee experience from the day they think about working for us to the day they leave the company, hopefully, and retire. So finance also doing a lot of work to try to provide technology to drive efficiency throughout finance. Cash management and those types of things. And it's interesting for me. I could go on all day the things we're doing, but it's interesting for me. It's not a silver bullet topic where you fire one bullet and you're suddenly digitized. It's a lot of small incremental steps to a better future where processes are enabled through the use of technology versus human capital. And, you know, sometimes as an IT professional, I always think about technology. There are times where it just makes sense for people to do the work and do the thinking and focus on the big picture. So we want to make sure we're applying the right technologies to the right situation where we get the most value and have the brain power of the organization focused on our biggest problems and biggest challenges.
All right. So we're going to switch to cybersecurity.
Yep.
Here we go. All right. So what are the main tenets of your policies and structures for cybersecurity?
Yeah, certainly we have a very broad set of policies for the organization with respect to security around the company, and quite frankly, everything cybersecurity related starts with good policies that are well communicated to the end user, because the end user is at the end of the day the place where the highest likelihood of vulnerability occurs. So we have, you know, traditional information security policies, we have vulnerability management policies, we have acceptable use policies. You know, I think we have 15 or 20 policies that we have put in place. Again, that's where it all begins. You know, with respect to the broader topic, and it's such a fast moving area, because no matter how smart you get, the bad actors are always one step ahead, unfortunately. So we have a 3-year roadmap, which again, a key part of that is around policies. A key part of that is around privacy and regulations, because the regulatory landscape keeps changing. Things like privacy policies in Europe or regulations in Europe around GDPR, California Consumer Protection Act is another one. You know, we have to be on our toes constantly, ever evolving our cybersecurity roadmap to make sure we're keeping up with, you know, today's trends and today's bad actors because they continue to change over and over and over again.
Okay, so you mentioned a lot of policies.
Yeah.
How do you get people and teams to adhere to work with you on those?
Yeah. So first of all, you got to communicate them. And annually, I call it personality training at OI, right? Things like, you know, respect in the workplace, adhering to the policies around who you can and can do business with, ethical behavior types of things. We also use those training tools as a method to educate and, you know, spotlight our policies for our employees worldwide. So that's one way. We also talk about information security through our training platform broadly, how to protect IP, what is IP, how do you protect IP, how do you protect information, like personally identifiable information. So we use training, and many of the companies that do ethics training and respect in the workplace training, many of those platforms have IT related content. We also do an immense amount of training and phishing campaigns, because phishing is the number one and easiest way to get inside a company. All you need is one person, one employee to click on the wrong link or click on the wrong attachment. So we do an immense amount of training with our employees with respect to that, and we run phishing campaigns. And we do things, tips and tricks for our employees to make sure they understand what's currently happening, but do it not from a business perspective, but from a personal perspective. We're trying to personalize these things, these tips, tricks, and education such that it's relevant in their personal lives as well as their business lives. And our hope is that those things stick. And then October being Cyber Month, we have a very, very full agenda that month as well that we try to educate our employees. So it's really about having training. It's about having communications and being repetitive with them. I you know, even things like strong passwords, reminding people, again, from a personal perspective in their personal lives as well as in their professional lives, that they use these things on a daily basis, and even share them with their families. That becomes the easiest way to reach our employees. If you're talking about them personally, instead of just in the business context, and their families, it really has a better opportunity to stick with them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you mentioned the bad actors. How do you keep track of the threats?
we do. I have a very, very, very smart cybersecurity team that works for me. I'm very blessed to have a great leader there, along with a great team of employees. We're forever researching. We use Gartner extensively. NAM. I've been to cybersecurity events with the organization. Voracious readers. My team does research on the internet all the time about what's happening. You know, some evenings and some mornings I pick up my mobile phone and I can read about, you know, trends as well. So we're using groups like this one as well as others to get information to try to stay at least step in step with the bad actors, and again trying to also use our partners as well, because they're seeing things that we don't see on a daily basis. So, you know, we have SOC services, Security Operations Center, and manage, detect, and response engagements where those companies can keep us informed. And in my company, I report to the audit committee and the board on a quarterly, virtually a quarterly basis. Even some of the board outlets where they're hearing about us, you know, cyber events, we're using, using those companies as well, external audit, et cetera. So we're trying to keep pace, but it's hard. It's hard because it's a fast moving world.
Hmm. So we've got a lot of folks from R&D on the call. So how do you ensure effective relationships with external partners, you know, while maintaining security? There's always that kind of, well, we want to partner with this company and, you know, or we want to share our data with them.
It's a great question and can often for an R&D department create frustration because my premise, good contracts make for good relationships, right? Doesn't say you won't be vulnerable to an event or an incident, but making sure you have good contracts in place with your partners, whether it's another engineering firm or another IT firm, having a certain set of contractual must-haves is incredibly important. We actually do security assessments, especially of our technology partners, information technology partners, ahead. We do security assessments, we do privacy assessments, and then we work very, very diligently to make sure we're not taking on the risk that the partner should be taking on through the contract, and then putting teeth in the contracts to make sure if there is an event where the partner or the supplier hasn't done what they should do, that they have a responsibility to make it right in terms of if it's a case of the creeping CRUD or malware or viruses, that they have a responsibility to make that right and help us remediate that. That they follow our rules and standards about remote access, because many of us in manufacturing these days rely on our third parties to help manage and support IT systems, manufacturing assets, et cetera. So we want them to follow our policies and use our technology to access our network, because it's we need to do that. And again, just making sure that there's clarity between OI and the supplier about how we're going to work together and what they'll do and not do.
Okay. So this is my last question. So start getting your questions into the chat, everyone. You know, one of the goals of this conversation has been to give a window into your world as the CIO, and I hope we've done that for everyone. But as a last step, can you let us know how best to approach our own CIOs and IT departments when we want to roll out new tools or work with new partners?
Yeah, be proactive about it. It's interesting, and I face this in my company too. One of my internal customers will come say, I want to buy this or that. Come with a business problem, not with a solution. We'll go a long way with building a bridge with your IT function. It's my team and I, along with legal and procurement, which are incredibly important relationships to have as well. If you come with a problem statement, something you're trying to solve versus solution, you're going to have a lot less friction going into that conversation. And I'll share with you, when I joined the company, the engineering and R&D functions were across the parking lot. That might as well have been an ocean when I got to the company. And, you know, it's far from perfect, but we have working relationships, good business relationships. We don't agree on everything, but we're in a place where we can work productively to get to better outcomes and solutions. by trying to work together. I use the boating analogy. You know, when I got here, we were all in different boats, rowing different ways. We, you know, finally we all got in the same boat and people were rowing in a little bit different direction. Now we're in the same boat trying to row together because we have mutual things we're trying to accomplish. At the end of the day, my job is to help enable my engineering and R&D functions and manufacturing, right? Not to fight with them. The enemy is outside the company, whether it's a bad actor, whether it's a competitor or whatever it might be. We have to be working and rowing in the same direction to get the better outcomes. And again, not every day is a walk in the park because IT has a responsibility to protect the enterprise from bad things, and R&D, engineering, manufacturing have, you know, want to get things done and get things moving, but we have to strike that delicate balance between risk mitigation, which contracts are all about risk mitigation, and progress. So it's not easy to do, but you start by building a bridge to work together in a more productive and achieve better outcomes at the end of the day.
Awesome. So we've already got questions coming in, and the first one is about the new manufacturing plan, and they want to know if it's considered Industry 4.0 or smart manufacturing.
That's a good question. It's a little bit of both, right? There's never one size fits all. You know, there's a lot of elements that are Industry 4.0. Some of the elements we're doing are smart manufacturing, and we're still innovating on our manufacturing, on our Magma platform. So there's no one answer to that question. So it is for us a significant transformation in how we manufacture glass and how we digitize the process. So you know, I wouldn't refer to it as one or the other.
It's all the things. We'll just say it's all the things. all right. So the next question is, you know, it's a great discussion. How do you decide how much security is enough in both IT and OT for standards, risk-based, et cetera?
Yeah. And again, that's not an easy question to answer, especially in the litigious world we live in today, right? You know, if you're unfortunate to have a ransomware event, everybody's going to come to the table claiming they were harmed, right? It's truly a balance of risk and reward, and we use an assessment tool to look at the most likely events, and those with the highest impact to the company, and we're working on those things first and foremost. There are just certain table stakes, like, and no one in manufacturing wants to hear this, but in a world where you have Microsoft devices, you have to patch. And again, the litigious world we live in, if you're not patching, you have an event, you know, I'm not a legal person, but I don't want to be the company that is negligent in that, you know, antivirus and malware protection. And many manufacturing equipment folks will tell you, manufacturers will tell you, you can't do patches, you can't install antivirus and malware protection. In most cases, you can. Our goal is not to disrupt manufacturing in any way, shape, or form, but there are certain things we must do. And And there are things that we're doing in manufacturing that are non-disruptive, that are just good security measures, like segmentation, micro segmentation of our networks, putting technologies in like NAC firewall, NAC technologies to prevent nefarious data flows across our networks, doing vulnerability assessments, which you have to be very careful you don't disrupt manufacturing equipment, assessing vulnerabilities in your manufacturing facility. So in today's world, it's hard to put a what is enough out there, because the evolution also makes it with bad actors finding new ways of working. It's just hard to put an end point on that. It's a continuum of what the company's risk appetite is and what you're able to feasibly do without negatively impacting productivity in the plant.
Okay, so
I was thinking that I'm very, very unpopular in the company because I shut off USB access, as an example, across the organization. Well, one of the most likely ways, other than email, that something can come in the company or go out of the company is a person that puts a USB drive in a PC and a server and a piece of manufacturing equipment. And, it's very, very unpopular, and I've been called a few names as a result of that. And in some cases, I have to say, I don't care, right? I have a responsibility to protect our company, to protect our customers, and protect our shareholders. So sometimes you have to take difficult decisions that are unpopular as well to protect the company.
Sounds like a hard balance to strike.
it is, and not every decision is going to be a popular one. And the more you can work together, and I'll use this as an example, cybersecurity steering committee is representation on that as and our company is legal, finance, engineering, research and development, engineering and manufacturing at the highest level of the company. So we're using that as a way to better balance as well. Again, no perfect outcome there, but a better one than perhaps we've had in over the 17 years I've been with the company.
So before we move on to the next question, you mentioned something called a NAC technology. What's that?
Yeah, NAC is network access control.
Okay.
Which we use Fortinet firewalls in this case, and network access control allows you to monitor network traffic in your facilities, see what's normal, and also see what's not normal. And you can do these things in a learning mode, or you can actually, once you've seen patterns over time of what's good and bad, you can also stop bad traffic from occurring on your network through automation versus trying to find it in some kind of log or report. So we are using that technologies to try to also help avoid nefarious activity on our network. And I probably drive people crazy hearing this. The problem is not necessarily a virus or a piece of malware on a piece of equipment when it becomes incredibly dangerous, and it is when it starts moving on your network. It becomes even more dangerous if it can call home to some command and control center that's out on the internet. So, and again, there's no one solution here, but that's an example where that type of technology can prevent bad data traffic on your network. And again, there's varying levels of how you use that technology, but can certainly be an incredible help in areas like offices, but even more so in manufacturing.
Okay, thank you for clarifying. So another question. So in the power industry, having a functional data platform and connectivity is a big gap. How would you go about selecting a contractor that doesn't tie them to one prime for a long time? It appears these companies need a modular, scalable system, and they don't have experience in this space to select the best contractor to help in these areas.
Yeah. If I hopefully I understand the question, starting with requirements is always the best way. If you have clear requirements or clear problem statement, starting that way and then vetting potential suppliers to help and support is the best way to get it done. And we do that with the help of our procurement and legal team when we really don't know what technology we want or what partner we want to work with. We use a good old RFP process to try to suss that out. In today's world, you can make the solutions more portable if you put it on the cloud, put it in Microsoft Azure or AWS or Google, so that you don't get cornered by a specific solution provider, in a SaaS type solution. Now there are benefits to software as a service, but certainly, allowing yourself to have the opportunity to transition from one cloud provider to another, or even on-premise. There's still a good place for on-premise technology. And we are not a cloud first company. I have a saying, cloud first, cloud broke. So using good logic on how you're going to scale, how big will it get? Is it disk is it storage intensive or is it compute intensive? Can also help drive decisions there, because those are the kind of decisions that drive cloud costs. And I'm probably unpopular for saying I'm not cloud first, but every tool has its place, and there is a place for cloud solutions and cloud infrastructure. There's also still a place for things to be run on premise as well. And hopefully I've tried to address the question. Hopefully if I didn't, please redirect it.
Awesome. Thank you. And we've got questions piling in and we're running low on time, so we're going to try and get through as many as we can. So the next one is, one of the digital trends in R&D is the implementation of so-called data lakes. These are places where large amounts of empirical and analytical data is shared broadly across large and global R&D organizations. Does OI have any experience or thoughts on this? Any special security concerns? Is the risk/reward worth it?
Yeah. The answer is yes, we have, and we are. We are, especially with R&D, because as I mentioned earlier, probably not so clearly, the transformation of our manufacturing processes and digitization of our processes is going to be founded on collection of big data, and a lot of data from our manufacturing subdomains, whether it's a batch house, a furnace, or inspection, and then tying all those things together, right? Finding cause and effects, et cetera. So we are using Microsoft Azure Data Lakes and Azure platform. And there is a balance there. We do we do use those things through our tenants, and we secure them, and they're not just open for everyone to go probe through. So, you know, one thing about security, certainly some of the hyperscalers like Microsoft, like Google, like AWS, you know, their reputation is based on making sure your data is protected and secure. So so the climb there is clearly worth the view and is well worth you know, pursuing.
I like that. The climb is worth the view.
I stole that from someone.
All right. Next question is, how do you ensure the compliance of the cybersecurity policies? And talking about GDPR compliance, data policy, data privacy policy is one of the tracks involved. Do you have a DPO nominated? Is this role under the cybersecurity team?
With respect to, we have a large footprint in Europe, so GDPR is certainly a part of our daily life, and of course we're worried about vendor PII, we're worried about customer PII, but even more so we're worried about employee PII. So, and for those that aren't familiar with PII, term personally identifiable information, we actually have a steering committee in our European group, of which my CISO sits on. It is run by our legal team in Europe. He is by far the leading privacy expert that we have in the company. There's representation from people and culture, once again, our HR team on that committee, and we have done a lot. Even more over the last year, because the regulations were changed last year at the end of the year. You know, working in developing additional processes, additional information we need to capture about our data and where it's flowing, using security assessments and data transfer impact analysis, which we request our suppliers to fill out even prior to negotiating an agreement. We've updated our contracts to include the new standard contractual clauses for compliance. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work for the team and a lot of work for my team. And it's also forced us to reconsider how we engage new suppliers to become more proactive, because I don't want to do deals with suppliers that can't comply with the GDPR rules and CCPA, and the California Consumer Protection Act is right behind it. And my biggest fear in the U.S., we're going to have 50 sets of regulations and standards. It's hard enough with you know, various countries, but I am concerned about that happening in the U.S. across all 50 of the states. And we have a cybersecurity advisory team that works with NAM as well, where we're part of our charter is to influence things like that here in the U.S. Whether we'll be successful or not, time will tell. But we certainly are trying to work on policy and influence with those things.
Awesome. And for those who don't know, NAM is the National Association of Manufacturers, and that's IRI's parent organization. Yeah. So.
Forgive me for being lazy.
No, it's fine. Just making sure everyone's on board with us and giving a small plug. So if anyone wants to learn more about it, just let me know. I'm happy to help. More questions. So do you have a future roadmap for cyber, and are you evaluating SASE solutions? SASE? That's not SAS.
Yeah. SASE solutions.
SASE. Okay.
So the first question was around road mapping. We have had a three-year cybersecurity rolling roadmap for almost 10 years now. So, and we just refreshed that cybersecurity roadmap last summer, and we're on the next three-year iteration of that. We have a cybersecurity steering committee, and we take it very, very, very seriously, and we have a pretty fulsome work plan over the next 3 years, of which OT is the largest part thereof. The biggest investments we're going to make are around cybersecurity and the operations. Certainly, there are other things we need to do with more traditional IT areas. There's always a lot of work in communication, education, but a lot of our work is focused on OT. The question about SASE, yes, we have deployed a SASE solution globally. And we're just finishing up the last few sites because we're also transforming our overall global network. And SASE was a key part of the decision around that transformation. So, and there are a lot of great providers out there for security, edge security services, Zscaler, Cato Networks, et cetera, et cetera. I can go on all day with those. We happen to select Cato, but certainly there are other great solutions out there.
All right, we've got two questions left, and I'm hoping we can get through them. And I think you might have answered part of this one already. So, does your company perform any penetration testing as part of your overall cybersecurity strategy? And what resources do you utilize for vulnerability management?
Yep. So the first part, yes, pen testing. We've done pen testing over the years, and certainly. Remediation, because if you're not finding something, you probably didn't hire the best pen testing company, and we are also doing broader and deeper assessments as well. We engaged a partner last year to do an entire assessment of our cybersecurity roadmap, our hygiene, traditional pen testing, etc. So. There are the president last year, if I remember, there were top 10 things you should do to protect your company from cyber. We've taken an even broader look at that, and we'll continue to do that because my goal is to continue to improve our cybersecurity posture. Again, trying to keep up with the Joneses, if you will, the bad actors. Doing that. So we did a what's called a cybersecurity maturity assessment, which looks at in the context of the NIST framework, not just an external pen test. So, and we'll continue to do that. And forgive me, Lee, what was the other part of the question?
What resources do you utilize for vulnerability management?
Yep. So we actually engage with SaaS solution provider initially for vulnerability management, and that company also provides our SOC, our Security Operations Center, along with managed detect and response services. So we've engaged the third party, and then my cybersecurity team, working in conjunction with my infrastructure team, working in conjunction with manufacturing and engineering. If we find a vulnerability, we work together to act on it. And if we find a vulnerability in plant, we work with the local plant. If we find something that's more systemic, we work with engineering because every day you can find new vulnerabilities because new things occur. But it's driven through my team as a starting gate based on feedback from our partner. to action those vulnerabilities. And I have one gentleman who is very enthusiastic when he finds a vulnerability. He takes it as a personal quest to go address it. So, and you know, there's some big vulnerabilities that have been announced over the last several months. Right before the holidays, it was the Log4j, the next iteration Log4j, and the most recent one is around VMware and potential exploits with VMware, which almost every company in the world is using to get the most value out of their hardware. So it's every day there's new vulnerabilities cropping up, and certainly we act on them very quickly.
All right, we've just got a couple minutes left, and thank you for doing all the questions, but I think this is really interesting one. So what are your thoughts on embedding / integrating a portion of IT in R&D so they are enabled to do their work efficiently, especially to decodify the tribal knowledge into more systemic ways?
Yeah, it's a great question as well. What we've done is we've taken a small team and ask them to plug into the R&D team, especially the team that is working on innovating our manufacturing platform. So they are deeply engaged, but they still work at you know, for IT. So we're trying to, again, build those collaborative bridges. I want to make sure my team's plugged in and working productively around new technology, digitization and cyber, and it's hard to do that if I abdicate those resources, because it's easy to get focused on the needful for R&D. So we're trying to strike a healthy balance there, but that's their job. They're there to work closely with R&D on the work initiatives we have and R&D has, first and foremost. Again, IT is here to support the business, not be the business. So we're trying to build and manage those relationships very closely tied to R&D and engineering and manufacturing. And I'll always say all three, because it's traditionally where IT has struggled to build the bridges that they need to.
All right, we did it. You got through all the questions. Thank you so much, Rod. I appreciate your candor. We've got lots of folks chiming in with their thanks in the chat. So we appreciate your willingness to get through all of them and share everything today. This has been awesome.
Yeah, no, great. I really appreciate having the opportunity. And if someone has a question afterwards, I'm more than happy to take it. So if there's a mechanism for that, Lee, happy to do that.
Yep. Feel free to pop me any questions you all have for Rod, and I will pass them on to him. And again, thanks so much. And thanks to all of you for coming out today and for listening to and for contributing questions and all that stuff. So thanks, everyone, and have a great rest of your day.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, everyone.